Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Moonshot NFT podcast. I'm Elliot, of course, joined by my wonderful co-host Matthew. Matt, great to see you.
Great to see you.
Lovely stuff, lovely stuff. And we are here to help demystify the cryptic world of NFTs. And of course, in the NFT world, there is a lot of terminology, shall we say. And so the first step when it comes to understanding what is going on is understanding some of the words that get thrown around.
And not just in the NFT world. I've just suddenly thought, because I actually had to explain, when I got my mum involved and my stepdad with the moonshot, there were also, phrases, acronyms that are not necessarily associated with NFTs, but just more text kind of modern short abbreviations that I think it would also be helpful to cover, given that we're trying to use this podcast to explain this wonderful world of NFTs to people that perhaps have no clue whatsoever and don't spend as much time texting or tweeting or communicating in the way that...
Indulging themselves in the world of acronyms.
Exactly. So we should cover as many things as we can.
Absolutely. We've got a whole list here that we're going to break down for you today. So you will leave here with a beautiful understanding of all these different NFT terminologies. And so to kick it off, Matt, I've got an NFT lingo style sentence for you that I'm hoping you'll be able to decipher to the lovely people listening to this podcast.
I hope I know them.
GM, today I minted a blue chip NFT that I'm really bullish on. I'm going to hodl this with my diamond hands.
Okay, that doesn't...
Explain.
That doesn't put the listeners off getting involved in NFTs. I'm not sure what will. Okay, let's break that down. GM is a very simplistic start. That simply means good morning.
Indeed.
And so, yes, if you spend any time on Twitter in particular, from my experience, talking or reading about NFTs, the best way for engagement pretty much any time of the day, it does not have to be morning because it's always morning somewhere, is to simply write the letters GM, right?
Absolutely.
So yes, GM, you minted, I think we covered this in a previous episode, but minting is the essentially creating or birthing or borning, I don't know what the word is, but the initial creation of an NFT is called to mint. So that's
The NFT might be a picture, for example, which will exist in the world as a picture, but then when someone puts that on the blockchain for the first time, that process, whoever does it first, is known as the process of minting.
Yes, so you minted a blue chip NFT. Blue chip, definitely covered on the last episode, which essentially means a great NFT. It's actually quite ironic that you should say you minted a blue chip NFT because you wouldn't know it was going to be a blue chip at the time of minting. That's just supreme confidence on your part coming through there, which good luck. Hopefully that's the case. Yeah, blue chip. You talked about it, didn't you, last time, where that comes from, I've forgotten.
It comes blue from chip. In an original poker set, the blue chip was always the highest value chip. And so
that's it.
Blue chip became a very common terminology used in the traditional stock market, where if a company was seen as a very safe bet that was going to produce a good return and seen as high value, it would be labeled as blue chip.
Absolutely. Which, if I remember rightly, you said you were going to hodl.
I was going to hodl.
Which I haven't actually read. I'm looking down my list now. I know what this means, but I haven't read if there's any other reason other than it basically means you're going to hold on to this NFT.
The story behind HODL is very... I think its history is traced back to a Reddit thread a number of years ago when somebody posted, I think in a bit of angst because I think some Bitcoin they were holding had gone down, and they just said, we're going to HODL, but... I think they just spelled hold
just
wrong.
Spelled it wrong.
But it became an acronym for hold on for dear life, which is great terminology. But don't quote me on that. That could be totally misleading.
But that's what it means. If you see HODL, H-O-D-L, usually always spelt in caps, then that's what it means. It means to hold on. My memory is failing me now. You said you were going to HODL.
With my diamond hands.
With your diamond hands, yes. Why would you say diamond hands? Diamond hands in this case being the opposite to paper hands. Diamond hands. Hands simply means that you are going to just keep hodling and hodling and hodling, right? You are going to hold on to it forever. essentially, or for as long as, for longer than most people, I think, would be a, maybe a fair way of saying it, in opposite to paper hands, which simply means to throw it away, sell it, offload it, take profits, ideally, sell it as quickly as possible, right?
Absolutely. No, very well translated, Matt. That's very
and
helpful.
Then you could end, if that was a whole sentence, you could end that with a GN.
With a GN.
If you're listening and paying attention right now, you may have guessed, simply means good night.
Indeed. No, I love it. And the whole world of crypto, Twitter, and the NFT sphere, they just spawned some beautiful phrases. So it could be said that someone who speaks like I just did in that sentence could be called a degen.
Yes. Yes. The NFT world is full of degens. Yes.
Of course, which is what NFT people lovingly refer to themselves as, degenerates.
Yeah.
Which I think is just quite hilarious. And the whole concept of a whole group of people making an extraordinarily large amount of money trading these pictures of lions, tigers and bears and all sorts of random stuff on the internet, sat inside at their desk in their boxer shorts.
Yes, yes.
Infamous as the DJ life.
Which reminds me of, I don't know the correct way to pronounce this or even say it, but I'm going to go with MFers. Yeah. Because they are like commonly known as either DJs or MFers, which is written MFERS. I'm pretty sure you can guess what that means if you're not.
You can't say it, we'll get banned.
We don't need this to become an explicit episode of the Moonshot podcast, but yes, that's another very widely used word.
Hardcore MFers. Love it. Let's go back to basics, Matt, and cast your brain back to when you first got introduced into the world of NFTs, and tell me about when you stumbled across MetaMask.
An educational video on YouTube, as soon as I heard of it, what it was, that was where I went to. And there are, I haven't looked recently, but even at the time, there were so many videos that really, I think nearly all of them were immediately like how to set up a MetaMask wallet, which actually was very easy. I think the bits that people focused on were when you're in the process of creating your MetaMask wallet, you'll be given a seed phrase or a secret phrase. It used to be called a seed phrase. It's now called a secret phrase, which is a list of 12 words randomly generated. And the advice was, from everything I'd seen online, don't save them. Don't write them down on your computer. Go back to basics. Go back to old school pen and paper. Jot those 12 words down. Lock them in a safe. Don't show them to anyone.
Never reveal them.
You should not ever have to re-enter those 12 words unless you are moving from one laptop to another laptop, for example. But in the transactions, or in any transactions for NFTs, you will not have... Something is wrong if you get asked to put your seed phrase or secret phrase into...
Never, ever give your seed phrase to anybody.
And then, of course, you, like any new account for anything, you have to have a username and a password. Of course, the password is also incredibly important, because if you forget that password, you're not going to get back into your MetaMask wallet. It'd be another sensible thing to write down, but also not to store on your computer, because this Web3 world, this world of NFTs, if there's one thing that people are good at, it's finding stuff on your computer. And I don't know how they do it, but the absolutely most sensible thing to do is just not save anything on your laptop, on your desktop, on your mobile phone, wherever you're transacting, and just write it down on pen and paper, right?
100%, yeah. And it's kind of a sad fact that nearly everyone I know who dabbles in the world of NFTs has been hacked at some point.
Yeah.
Because of the money flowing through the system, it's just rife for that sort of activity. You've got to be safe, because you don't want to be sorry, and it's very common in this space.
Yeah.
But so
I saw as well, just on that subject, a post on Twitter the other day, someone just saying how they still can't get their head around the fact that someone can airdrop you, so essentially transfer you an NFT.
That's another key term.
Airdrop you an NFT, so it just appears in your wallet. Now, that in itself is not a bad thing, because I could airdrop an NFT to Elliot, which essentially means me transferring from my wallet into Elliot's wallet. That's an NFT is airdropped into his wallet. But then, this would be a typical scam. Someone airdrops you an NFT, and then they offer to buy it from you. So they place an offer on their NFT for 0.5 ETH, or whatever it might be. Usually it's lower, 0.14, 0.15 ETH. And then if you would never do this, but if you clicked to accept that offer and sell that NFT, then built into the background of that transaction, they have access to all of the NFTs in your wallet and can essentially steal them.
Goodness me.
Which you cannot do anything about because you've just granted them permission to do that. You didn't know you were, of course, but this is why the general rule would be if it looks too good to be true, then
it probably is.
It probably is, and don't do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Crazy what's possible, but proceed with caution. And absolutely, if it doesn't make sense, because there is no reason why anyone would airdrop you an NFT and then, or it just turns up in your wallet and then all of a sudden you've got an offer to sell it, you know, that someone wants to buy it from you.
Listen,
you're
going
to receive that money.
People out here ain't just sending you free money,
no,
basically. So if it ever looks like that, then you really need to do some digging and don't go anywhere near it. But so MetaMask, if you're venturing into the world of NFTs, this is the big popular wallet that you'll come across. We use it personally and with our Moonshot DAO. It's a wallet that primarily operates on Ethereum, which of course is the blockchain ecosystem that most of NFTs exist on. You will also hear a lot about, at the moment, Solana, which is another blockchain ecosystem where NFTs are also on. But the Ethereum NFT marketplace at the moment is the original in quotation marks there and also the biggest. But many other chains are growing, but primarily you'll be dealing in Ethereum. And then the place where you'll go to typically look and browse and buy and sell all these NFTs is a place called Open, which is just known as an NFT exchange. And so this is just a website, OpenSea.io, where you can go to and you can buy, sell, browse, look at all the NFT collections that are currently on the market. You can create your own NFT collections and so on and so forth. This is the marketplace where people go. And when you're on this marketplace, you're able to connect your MetaMask with your funds in and your NFTs. And that's how you're able to now interact and buy and sell and list them and so on. And another interesting place that's useful to be aware of is called Etherscan. And so Etherscan is a very handy little tool because whenever we publish any sort of transaction on the Ethereum blockchain, it can sometimes take a little while to go through, anywhere from 10 seconds to like a minute in some cases, depending on how busy the network is.
Which is sometimes a very nervous minute or
a few minutes
if you've spent a lot of money.
Yeah,
or if you're waiting to receive a lot of money from a sale.
Very much, very much. And sometimes transactions can fail. So you can be in the process of trying to buy an NFT or mint an NFT like we talked about, and the transaction can fail. And so that actually happened to me one day, and I was trying to mint a NFT, a Foxfam NFT, when I was sat in Burger and Lobster in Stratford. And long story short, because so many people were trying to mint the same NFT, I was submitting all of these transactions, which were costing me like $100 a time, and they were just failing. And so I, in essence, lost about $600 and got no NFTs and just in the transaction fees. But Etherscan is the place where you can go, you can see how your transaction is doing, and you can basically search for any user, any wallet, and you can effectively see every single transaction ever recorded on the Ethereum blockchain because it's totally transparent and has that level of visibility. So that's where you can scope out different things, make sure your things have gone to the right place, and so on and so forth.
It can be it can look very complicated.
It can.
It's not a website I use very often at all because, quite honestly, I don't understand a lot of it. But I'm sharing that because I think it's really important that you don't need to understand a lot of it, right? You can see the obvious stuff. If you know what you've done or what you were doing, what was moving where, what did you mint or what did you sell or what transactions you've done. But because all of these transactions and your wallet itself is such a long series of letters and numbers, there's just a lot of letters and numbers all over any page on Etherscan.
Yeah.
And so, I would say it's helpful to understand. It's helpful to have an idea of what it's showing you, but it's not critical to be like crystal clear on everything that is shown on there.
100%. So now, Matt, let's imagine we're on OpenSea browsing some NFTs. We got our buying hats on. And one of the first things we always look at is the floor price.
Yes. So the floor price is the current lowest cost that you can buy that particular NFT for. So on a typical 10,000 quantity PFP project, we've talked about these in previous episodes, if there are 10,000 NFTs within this project, like the CryptoPunks project or the Bored Ape Yacht Club project, of course, OpenSea is a marketplace, so think of it a little bit like eBay. And so it's the place where people are going to go to buy and sell. And when selling anything, there will always be the lowest cost one, which, yeah, in the NFT world is known as the floor, is the lowest price. And so that's what that means. So when you're thinking about, if once you get to the point of owning and having a bag, which is a way of people, or word that people use to describe your wallet, have you got a good bag? I'm not sure whether that's just a bit of an American thing as well. I don't think we've said before this is an English podcast.
I'm sure they can tell by our accents.
Yeah, when I might just be saying things that's not nothing to do with NFTs at all, but maybe they call their actual wallets bags. I don't know. But yeah, if you've got a good bag full of like blue chip NFTs, then if you wanted to know the value of your NFT collection, that's how you would work it out, right? You'd look at the floor price of that project, because, or you can be reasonably confident, especially if there is some activity and there's an activity tab on OpenSea. So you can see like when was the last time one of the NFT collection that you're looking at has bought or sold. And so you can see if one sold 3 hours ago and there's regular transactions, you can be pretty confident that you could list, if you needed to, if you wanted to sell, you could list at the floor or thereabouts. And that is the value of your NFT, right?
100%. And so floor tracking is quite a nominal thing in the world of NFTs. You're always looking at what the floor price of a collection is. The quality of a collection will often be judged on what the floor price is. And of course, if a collection seems to have a floor price that is growing, then that tends to lean into itself and generate a lot of hype and can help it grow even more. Similarly, if the floor is falling, then that too can diminish the hype and actually make the floor fall even further. But there's one other way the floor price comes into it, because you have the floor price of the whole collection. But as we've discussed before, NFTs typically will have some sort of rarity. So these NFTs that are made up of different character traits. So for example, you guys have got a CryptoPunk.
Yeah.
And these CryptoPunks come in all different varieties. Men, women, aliens, zombies, apes. And they also have all sorts of different attributes. Different clothing, eyewear. Some have got cigarettes, stuff like that. And each of these traits that's sort of programmed into these CryptoPunks, there's a scarcity to them. So there's only X amount of apes, for example, or X amount of aliens. And because there's many, much fewer of them, they are much rarer. And so what you'll often see as well is that different traits will have different floor prices. So the floor price for the CryptoPunks collection might be 60 ETH, for example, but the floor price for an alien might actually be 100 ETH or something like that. So just different ways it can come into play there.
Yeah, and on OpenSea, it's quite, I mean, they have changed, they've made so many improvements to OpenSea since we've been involved over the last year or so. And so you can now use the filters to basically say, show me all the Bored Ape Yacht Clubs with 3D glasses or something like that. And it will show you what the lowest price is for those ones with that trait. And therefore, you can be pretty confident that's the floor price of that one that you hold, if that's the same as yours, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So moving on then. Other terminology, bullish and bearish. So this is not new to NFTs, strictly tied to NFTs. This is, of course, classic terminology used in the traditional stock markets and investing world. So if you're seen as bullish on something, that means you are thinking the price is going to go up. Whereas if you're bearish on something or bearish on an NFT project, that means you think the price is going to go down. So you can quite often get a good feel for the sentiment around a project on crypto Twitter by how many people are talking about how bullish they are on a certain project, or indeed how bearish they are on a certain project.
If, I just thought of another one we didn't mention earlier, if someone was particularly bullish on something, they may also say, they may also use the word wag me.
Wag me. I love the phrase wag me.
And actually, we, as our Moonshot DAO, we own a Wag Me United NFT, right?
Absolutely.
So first of all, Wag Me stands for?
We are gonna make it.
Yeah.
Or is it we're all?
Yeah, we're all gonna make it. We're all gonna make it. And then in contrast to that, you could also say NGM.
Because you're not gonna make it.
Exactly. But Wag Me United, just as an aside, so this is a group of individuals that have come together and they've formed a company called Wag Me United. We're all gonna make it United. And they bought a football team. And so they bought Crawley Town Football Club. And then, so they bought it as a company. And then what they did is they released an NFT project, or and you don't get any ownership or sort of shares in the football club as a holder of the NFT, but you're a supporter of, and there are benefits to holding it. And I think certainly we bought into it because it's just such a fascinating idea that a group of people, a group of degens, if you like, on the internet who've done exceptionally well with NFTs can, just because they decided to, come together, form a company, and then buy a, English Town Football Club and decide that their goal is to take it from whatever league it's in, which I've completely forgotten right now. I think it's a lower tier.
A few leagues down.
League, and their goal is to get it into the Premiership.
Absolutely. Come on, Wagme United. Yeah. It's a great story. Another great way of tying NFTs into the real world as well. Those DGNs, hey, they can do some remarkable things.
Yeah, and also I've just remembered as well, that group of people that came together to form Wagme United, in NFT land, they wouldn't be called friends. They would be called friends, right? So if you'll see, if
minus
you
the
get
D.
involved with NFT Twitter, FRENS, hey friend or hey friends, that's what people say to each other.
Exactly. I'm not really sure of the history there.
No, but me neither.
They love their friends.
Yeah, that's what it means.
When everyone's feeling bullish on crypto Twitter, and the GMs and the hey friends are flying around, and all the DGens are in a great mood, that's all happy days. But there are times when a thing called FUD spreads into the crypto Twitter sphere. And so FUD stands for Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt. It's an acronym, but it just refers to when people are spreading bad news, either legitimately or illegitimately.
So you could say, for example, or you might read or hear say about FUDing a project, or which essentially is not a good thing.
No,
really.
And there's a couple ways, because how NFT projects appear on Twitter actually has a real impact on the value of the NFTs. And so, because a lot of it is driven by hype and speculation, the more people can whip up hype and drama, typically the more they can get the floor price of a project to increase. And of course, if you're holding that NFT, you're incentivized to do this because you want your bags to grow and develop. That also works on the other way around as well, because if you have a bunch of people spreading a bunch of fear, uncertainty, and doubt through negative news stories, rumors, and all sorts of stuff, then people are going to start to lose faith in a project, and they're going to start to sell. They're going to start to paper hands it, but sell it beneath the floor price. And obviously the whole collection price is going to go down. And so lots of people do that, unfortunately, just to try and, whenever there's money involved in anything in the world, frankly, you have good actors and bad actors that will seek to take advantage of it. But what is also interesting is what a lot of NFT projects do as well is they coordinate Twitter raids. So they'll have a channel in their Discord, which is a platform we've talked about on here before, where NFT DGNs like to hang out. And they will coordinate, okay, so all the holders of this NFT collection, let's all at 1 p.m. tomorrow go on Twitter and raid this other collection and basically promote our collection, or indeed say some bad stuff about this collection.
Yeah.
All in an effort to create a little bubble of either hype or negativity that either sends their project up or sends their enemy's project down.
And quite often, certainly going back to what Sever at the beginning in terms of acronyms that maybe you've heard of, maybe you haven't, one of the reasons to do that is to create some FOMO around that project, right?
FOMO is one hell of a drug.
Yeah. So FOMO, so fear of missing out. It's driven me to purchase some NFTs before, for sure.
Yeah. We're all guilty of
it. FOMO is real, but it can come as a result of this surge of interest and hype and kind of a lot of people talking about a particular project on Twitter, right?
Well, if you're in a room, a very crowded room, and all of a sudden everyone runs to the window and starts pointing and screaming, and you're just at the back of the room, your instinct to not just run up there as well, it's going to be so strong, you're going to have to do so well to resist that.
Yeah.
But FOMO has definitely been a big driver of a lot of NFT projects, because in the early stage we're in, the truth is at the moment there's some projects that are building things and time building out utility and developing games and metaverses and all this stuff and actually doing things. But there's a whole bunch of projects that, frankly, just were in it for a bit of a cash grab and are miles away from delivering anything really of value. And some of the things they might talk about in their roadmaps, etc., realistically are years away. But they were still able to gain such huge traction, particularly the latter part of last year when things really mooned, all because of FOMO.
Yeah.
Because in this sector of digital collectibles is really what it's all about, where there is this now element of scarcity. People always want, to a degree, what they can't have. But as you say, when they see a lot of people shouting and screaming about this new thing and they see that floor price begin to creep up, then people just jump in.
Yeah, and what you might see, one of the things that used to get said a lot, I haven't seen it as much recently, is if people share something really quite positive about a project and they simply put probably nothing, then that means the exact opposite. That's just commonly known as it means probably something, like something is happening. That's where the FOMO sort of starts. When you see just some news shared and someone's just put probably nothing, then it might be worth digging into. But of course, that person might be just like...
might be telling the truth.
Yeah, but that's what it means. Anyway, if you see it and you just think, okay, that's a bit weird, that's what it means.
Lovely stuff. Yeah. I hope you won't mind me asking a somewhat personal question, but have you ever been pumped and dumped?
Sounds like something I would remember. Yeah. I'm looking forward to your translation so I can be clear on what I'm admitting to here.
Okay, so a pump and dump in the NFT space is just a description of a very common scam. So because NFTs burst onto the scene in such a bubble with such huge amounts of money thrown at it, lots of bad actors saw this as an opportunity to jump in and capitalize. And so what they would do is they would create a Twitter, they would create an NFT collection and do lots of like Twitter marketing, trying to generate some hype and talk about how their collection's going to be so good, when all they're really trying to do is generate a pool of buyers. So there's a little bit of liquidity. So them, the founders, can in essence just launch this collection with no intention of ever doing anything, to just quickly sell it all off and then basically dump the price. Because what happens when they create the NFTs and people start buying them, the price goes up. And then all of a sudden, as they realize there's liquidity there, the owners behind it will just sell all of theirs. The price will crash and then they'll just run off because they're anonymous and untraceable and live a happy day. So the pump and dump is what you want to avoid, basically.
Absolutely. And most likely to happen in a particular NFT project where the founders have not been doxed.
Absolutely.
Be another word that people might not be familiar with.
Absolutely. You always want to make sure your founders are doxed, typically, because what this means is it means that they are, you know who they are in real life. Because a lot of NFT founders like to be anonymous. And so if you're anonymous, you are not doxxed yet. But when you get doxxed, that basically means either you or someone has found out who you are and it is public knowledge. So for example, myself and Matt, we are clearly doxxed as the two people behind this podcast. But lots of NFT founders like to be anonymous. And sometimes there's a few rare occasions where this has been fine. In 99.9% of scams, it has occurred because the founders are anonymous and they really are just some scammer somewhere trying to take advantage of you. So always good and always a positive if you know the people behind the project and they are doxxed. Speaking of scams, pump and dump, there's also another word known as rug pull, which I guess ties into the very same thing.
Yeah.
Any experience with rug pulls, Matt?
Thankfully, no personal experience, I'm relieved to say.
No. Excellent. Because a rug pull can take a few forms, but typically all it means is same as a pump and dump in that a project launches and manages to gain a bit of traction and people buy the NFT. So now the project is sat on a whole bunch of funds. And what they either do then is just walk away and not deliver on any of their promises, or some other thing happens that basically pulls the rug out from underneath that collection. It becomes common knowledge and then the collection loses all the value. So anyone that bought in therefore has lost all of their money.
Yeah, because to go back to previous point, the floor price would become, because everyone would just try and, usually would just try and sell for whatever they can redeem to get any money back before it crashes and dies altogether. So the floor price is getting lower to the point at which it's probably not even worth selling, because
Of course, when there's a bit of FUD in the air and everyone's panicking, you really want to offload your NFT and save your money, you're going to just list it for a little bit below whatever the floor price is, because you then become the most attractive offer.
And actually, just one thing on that reminds me, sometimes you will see people, because I've certainly seen this on, I see it shared on Twitter, but then you see the transactions on OpenSea, are people selling for a loss And you wonder why. Of course, if you need the money, you need the money. So there will always be some people that just need the liquidity. They just need to sell to get their money out. At different times of the year, or one particular time of the year, you'll see tax harvesting mentioned a lot on Twitter, which is where essentially people are selling on purpose at a loss so that they can use those losses to write off against the profits that they may have made on some other NFT projects.
100%, 100%, a very sneaky tactic, but very clever in another way this system can be used. But of course, we're not endorsing that.
No, but it's something to be aware of, because it might mean, because you might see it and then question, like, why are they selling? Is it a bad thing? Is it an opportunity? Of course, it might be all of these things,
yeah,
but
you never know.
It's
and
helpful
also,
to know it happens.
Yeah, because it depends also, because you will get someone who may have bought an NFT for 2 ETH and they've sold it for 1 ETH, but they bought it when ETH was at a really cheap price, and now ETH has gone up. So actually, if you looked at the USD or the pound value of the NFT, it could be more. But anyway.
Yeah, but I think that, and that is the sort of level of detail that I believe if you were to look into Etherscan, you can find out. That's where you'll see the rate of which, the rate ETH was at.
Yes.
When they purchased it compared with the rate ETH was at when they sold it. So yeah, you can make an ETH loss, but a GBP or a USD gain.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's just, it might be something else that explains the reasons behind why people are doing what they're doing.
100%, 100%. And so I think it's fair to say that we would both have ambitions of becoming a whale one day.
Yes. So a whale is the word used to describe someone with a lot of money or a lot of NFTs.
With fat bags.
Yeah, with very valuable collections. Or whales is the word that used to describe people that if they suddenly get a good feeling about a project, they might come in and not just buy one or two, like we might do at the moment, but they'll just buy 100.
They might sweep the floor.
Indeed, they could sweep the floor.
Term.
Yes, very true. Which I believe there are now tools, that there's actual things that, programs that you can use to sweep the floor, right? Before these were created, you'd have to, I think anyway, literally go to OpenSea and buy all of the NFTs at the floor, the cheapest ones, like we described before, and just individually buy them all. But now, yeah, I think there are tools that you can use to say, well, I want to buy the cheapest 50 or 100 or however many and sweep the floor of a whole project.
Indeed, and maybe acquire 100 or so pandas.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, sweeping the floor is a very interesting term, but whales are quite big in the crypto sphere, because you have crypto whales that are people who have big wallets full of loads and loads of crypto, millions and millions of dollars worth. And then you also have NFT whales as well, people who are holding millions and millions of dollars of worth of NFTs in their wallets. And so it's interesting in crypto space, because everyone's wallet is visible and transparent. You can see and identify like what these wallets are, and also what journey they've been on to get to the stage they are at now, when they are buying something new. And so following whales, and sometimes they're known as smart money because they're deemed smart because they have managed to accumulate such ridiculously large amounts of funds. And so there are different programs and tools and people who can basically track what whales are doing. And so if you see a whale buying into a project, then a lot of other people will then follow and buy into that project as well.
Yeah, I hate myself for saying this, probably going to say it wrong, but to drop some alpha on that on that statement, Elliot, which is what people say when they are kind of sharing news or kind of, yeah, I can't quite believe I just said that. But one thing to watch out for when you are looking at those kind of whale wallets, because it's great that it's completely transparent, so you can see, yeah, what NFTs they have in their collection. And of course, you might decide to use that to influence what you want to buy into. But just a word of caution is that they're just like us, just like we talked about earlier, they're not in control of what NFTs they get airdropped. So they could be holding a terrible NFT that they didn't choose to buy. Within a few seconds, you can dig into their activity and you can see whether they actually purchased it or not. But it's just something to watch out for, just because they hold it in their wallet, because these scams have been around for several months now, where they'll, a bad scammer would airdrop one of their NFTs or several of their NFTs to one of these whale wallets, then they'll go on to Twitter and they'll share that this particular person has purchased it, and they'll try to create this hype around it, and it's all just false. And yeah, that person did not buy it in the first place.
It's a sneaky tactic of generating hype. And yeah, a lot of people will airdrop their new collection to a whole bunch of celebrities, all these whales, again, to try and incite that level of hype. I think it feels fitting, Matt, to end the terminology section on probably our favorite term. To moon.
Yeah, quite. Yes. Which hopefully is pretty self-explanatory, is the reason that we're called the Moonshot DAO. Because, we want our NFT collection to go up.
To the moon. To the moon. We do. We want it to go, the prices to reach the moon, metaphorically speaking, of course. Lovely stuff. Well, look, I hope you found that useful and that you now can begin to understand and feel comfortable divulging in the world of NFTs. But I thought it would be useful, Matt, to touch on as well the process of actually when you buy an NFT. We've talked about the MetaMask wallet and the OpenSea, which is what we need for Ethereum NFTs. But say we bought and sold a few NFTs, we made a bit of Ethereum, bit of profit. Then when it comes to actually turning that back into pounds and tangible money in your bank account, because ultimately that's a lot of the reason people play around in this realm, it's to make gains, make money. And it's a fairly simple process. First and foremost, you need what's called, technically called a fiat on or off ramp. And all this is a ramp or a way for you to get your fiat, your traditional money, your great British pounds or US dollars into Ethereum if we're going to buy some Ethereum NFTs. So typically this will just be a crypto exchange, and there's dozens of them out there. I think my personal favorite is Kraken, I'm sure.
Binance is the one I got introduced to first and Binance one I still use now.
That's a good one. And Coinbase as well.
Yeah.
There's plenty. Simple to make an account. You just go in, register, blah, blah, blah. And then you're able to deposit your pounds into the crypto exchange. And then you are basically ready to go. So you'll use this exchange to exchange the pounds into Ethereum. And then once you've got your Ethereum sat in your account, you can now, this is where the whole MetaMask wallet comes in, because we can't buy NFTs from your crypto exchange, because that's just like a individual thing, bank account.
It's essentially like it's very similar to your online bank account, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we send our Ethereum that we bought in the exchange to our MetaMask wallet, and our MetaMask wallet is our little gateway to the world of Web3, which is, you know, what the new era of the internet is described as. And so when you have a MetaMask wallet, you typically will install it as a extension in one of your browsers that you use on your laptop, or indeed there is a app on your phone that you can use. And when you go to any website which enables engagement with the MetaMask wallet, there'll be a little prompt and you can connect your wallet. So how this materializes in the world of NFTs, you'll go to OpenSea and there's a big button. Instead of having a login button like there would be if you go to Facebook, which is known as Web2, on OpenSea there's going to be a little button that says connect wallet. You press this, click the MetaMask icon, and this is where you then type in your password. And once you're done, your wallet, which now has your Ethereum in, is now connected to OpenSea. And so now you're able to browse, buy, and even list and sell NFTs all through that wallet. Because when you buy and sell the NFTs, that wallet not only holds your Ethereum, but it's where all of your Ethereum NFTs are held as well. So that becomes your little safe haven for everything that you do. So say we've then had a great run, we've bought an NFT and then we've sold it, and we've now got more ETH in our MetaMask wallet than we had before. When you want to actually convert that back to pounds, you basically just reverse the process. So you would send the Ethereum from your MetaMask wallet to your crypto exchange, your Kraken, Coinbase, Binance. And then when you're on there, you can simply exchange that Ethereum back into pounds, and then you can just withdraw it into your bank account. So a few little steps there, and it's useful to know, but that's the full journey, because of course, before you throw any money at any sort of investment, you need to have a very clear picture of how exactly you're going to get that money back.
Yeah, and certainly one thing we did when we still do it now, but certainly did when we were doing all these things for the first time, is start off with a very small amount of money as a test, because it is very possible to get all these things wrong.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to transfer, if your intention is to transfer several hundred or thousands or whatever, then, you know, start with a tenner. Like, just check.
Seriously,
make sure it goes through. See that it does exactly what you wanted it to do. And that's for when you're putting money into it. Same when you're taking money out, because you want to make sure that, yes, it does. and do that with a small amount of money first, just to make sure everything is correct. And it's not going to cost you much to test that, you know.
It's not, and it's worth it. I've lost $3,000 once in a transaction that I sent to the wrong place.
Yeah, so just because there's no reversing it. Like, you put in the wrong address, you put in the wrong wallet, the wrong, it's much like a bank account. Like, you accidentally send it to the wrong account number, it's going to be impossible to get that money back.
But this time, there's no bank to help you. So that's the pros and cons of this new Web3 world. It puts the power back in your hand. And I can sometimes rush through things. And when I was first playing around in the world of NFTs, was just trying to move some money around to buy a couple of NFTs. And I didn't send a test transaction. And yeah, I sent about $3,000, I think, at the time of crypto to the wrong address. And yeah, there's no one can help me. I've only got myself to blame.
Yeah.
It was a very painful lesson.
It's an expensive lesson to learn.
Indeed.
So yeah, always just try a small amount first. It'll take longer, but it's worth it. And that's just the safest way to do it.
Indeed. Don't learn
it
the hard
way. But it is a simple process. Simple to put money in. And it's exactly, as you say, Elliot, it's just reversing the process. Very easy to, simple to withdraw it as well. And that's, of course, depending on what you want. So you might want to, you might need the cash. So you might want to convert it back into your own currency. You might feel safer with it in the bank. Who knows? That's entirely dependent on your own risk and all that sort of stuff. But that's the process to do it.
100%. There you have it. A deep dive into the world of NFTs. Hopefully you now understand the lingo. Matt, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Always.
And guys, we'll see you later. To the moon.